Making the world a better place one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. All right.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I just love that introduction. All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's the end of April. It's just about the last week of April. If you're podcasting this show later, you'll know that this is an earlier show. And right now we're live. We are screwing live. I mean, not screwing, but we are live. The George Wilder Jr. Show is live. But, you know, if you can't catch it live, always podcast the show. That's one of the things I like about this internet radio show podcast. Some people call it a podcast. Some say radio. Some say internet. Whatever you say, I love it. Because you don't have to be listening right now. If you're busy, you're doing something, whatever, you got family to tend to or whatever, you can always listen to the show. You're at work or whatever, you can always listen to the show later, anytime at your convenience, because it will always be here. The recorded shows, the podcast will always be here and you can always listen to the shows anytime during your convenience. But listening live, listening as I'm doing the show, it is so much fun because, you know, you never know what's going to happen. You never know. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and it's a beautiful day in Chicago. Folks, I hope it's beautiful where you are, because it's no fun knowing that things are beautiful here and may not be so beautiful where you are, and I know it, and something tells me that it is, and you're having a great time. Whatever you're doing, have a great time. Have a great time doing it and make it fun. Whatever you do, make it fun. And always get out there and exercise, folks. It is, especially if it's gorgeous, if the days is gorgeous, get out there and get out there in nature and, you know, put some fresh air into your lungs and just enjoy it and just enjoy it. Enjoy the time that you have here. Make it a wonderful time, a wonderful time. All right, Judge Block Sanctuary Cities. Okay, this is another blow for Donald Trump. And a lot of people are talking about his 100 days in office. And of course, Donald Trump is going to make it sound like he's done a lot of great things in his 100 days in office as president. Donald Trump is saying this is a silly tradition. It's silly. Oh, yeah, it's silly and dumb because he is not up to par. But if he was up to par, he'd be saying, this is great. This is wonderful. I'm winning. You know, but anytime something is not going his way, it's, you know, it's not good. It's not needed. It's silly. You know, anything that's not going his way. But if it's going his way, he's all for it. Anyway, judge blocks Trump's order on sanctuary city funding. Okay, let's see. Are we having computer problems? Okay, we'll get back to that later. Anyway, my guest today is Joanne Dribolowski. Okay, if I'm pronouncing that light, I'm trying to break it into syllables. Joanne Derbolowski on the George Wilder Jr. Show. She's been on before, and I remember her. I mean, if a guest comes on the show twice or three times, you know, it's always it's always an honor, because especially if they have been asked back, or if they request to be back on the show, and if I say yes, then I'm sure that the guest that is returning will bring something new to the show, and that we all can find out, and that we all can learn from. Because I've said sort of several times, folks, no one is immune to learning. You know, I mean, I don't care if you're 55, 65, 75, 85. We all learn something. We're all capable of learning something new every day, every day. And just because you're going to school, I mean, high school, college or anything, it doesn't mean that you're learning everything you need to know. I mean, because, you know, there are so many kids out here who are going to school every day, and you ask them a simple question or a simple questions of something that they should know, they don't know a damn thing. You said, wow, you're going to school every day. Yeah, but they're not teaching it. And so many schools are going away or getting away from teaching the traditionally what they've taught in the past. I mean, you can go to school nowadays and you don't learn much about history, especially Black history. You learn hardly anything, and some schools don't even teach Black history. And some they don't. Some schools don't even teach American history. You got some schools that they don't even mess around with science. So it's a different day than it today than it was 10 or 20 or 30 years ago in terms of teaching, you know, because you got some kids going to school nowadays, they don't even have homework. They don't even have books, but they're going to school every day. And obviously, in my mind, if you send a child to school and there is no textbooks for the subject matter that they are supposed to be learning, then that school is not teaching, is not credible in my book. And you have a school that doesn't give out homework on a daily basis or at any time, that's not a good school. But a lot of people send their kids to school because, you know, they want their kids to be around other kids, other students their age. And that's nothing wrong with that. Then there's people who send their kids to school because they don't have the means or the wherewithal to do homeschooling themselves. Because I think homeschooling would be a great tool for a lot of students. They will get the learning that they need, you know, because school, the traditional schools are not providing that anymore. And not providing that anymore. You know, there are certain things that are, I mean, history books today, if kids are learning history in school, some of the history has been redacted. A lot of it has been taken out. I think history books have become more conservative. And a lot of the things that you need to know have been taken out, redacted, or whatever you want to call it. A lot of the schools aren't teaching what they should be teaching. And some of the kids don't even know that. They don't even know. They're just going there to learn, to get their diplomas and to get a good job and get out. But learning never stops. It never stops. You learn something every day, all the time. And a lot of the things that we learned that we didn't learn in school is more beneficial than what we didn't or did not learn in school. And when I say school, I'm talking about grammar school, high school, college, you know, things like that of that nature. Okay. San Francisco, a federal judge on Tuesday blocked any attempt by the Trump administration to withhold funding from sanctuary cities that do not cooperate with the U.S. immigration authorities, saying that the president has no authority to attach new conditions to federal spending. He has no authority. Trump and his goons think because Trump is president that anything he says and anything he wants, he should get. They didn't let Obama do that. Matter of fact, I think the Republican controlled Congress actually weakened, took away some of the presidential powers of President Barack Obama. They took away some of it, and Barack Obama was just adamant about it. He said, "Well, I'm going to try and be president with what they let me do." But Trump here, this guy's got a lot of gall. He wants to be a dictator. He wants to be a emperor or a king or something that what he says goes, and it doesn't. It doesn't. He has to follow the law and the Constitution, which is something that he shirks. All right, U.S. Judge William Orrick issued the preliminary injunction in two lawsuits, one brought by the city of San Francisco, the other by Santa Clara County, against an executive order targeting communities that protect immigrants from deportation. Okay, now this is another loss, and it's going to go in a loss column for his first 100 days. The injunction will stay in place while lawsuits work their way through court. The judge said that President Donald Trump cannot set new conditions for the federal grants at stake. But you know what? A lot of these people, a lot of Donald Trump's surrogates and Donald Trump's stooges, they're going to be going around, you know, the television circuit, the talk show circuit, and they're going to be saying, "Well, what the hell is wrong with this judge? He's an activist judge. He must be Hispanic or something. You know, he has no right to tell the president what the president can't do." The president cannot break laws. They will go to jail like everybody else. But the surrogates are going to be around the talk show circuit, and they're going to debase this judge for this. Federal funding that bears no meaningful relationship to immigration enforcement cannot be threatened merely because a jurisdiction chooses an immigration enforcement strategy. Something to that effect. Okay. That was something that the judge, and I was quoting the judge, okay? That was something that the judge said that cannot happen. But anyway, like I said before, Trump is going to try and debase the judge and say that the judge doesn't know what the hell they're doing. And I'm president. By me being president, I should be able to override anything that a judge tries to say I can't do. That's Donald Trump, you know, so. We just have to see what else is going to come out of that, because it's not over. And Donald Trump is saying that his accomplishment in his first 100 days in office is silly. He's saying it's silly. Obvious it's silly, because he's had some failures and some letbacks. And I'm hearing that the spending bill that he's trying to get through will probably go through because he's taken the border wall funding for the border wall out of the package. And now it may just sail through Congress, and there will not be a government shutdown because of it. Wow. This administration is wow. And Barack Obama came out. I talked about this, I believe, yesterday. Barack Obama came out and basically said nothing. He came back from his whatever he came back from, hibernating somewhere or whatever. And he came back and he was on television. And basically, in my view, he basically said nothing. A lot of the people were disappointed because Obama refused to be. I knew he would. I knew he would. I didn't think he was coming back to Chicago, actually. But a lot of people wanted Obama to join them in the fight against Trump. Obama refused. He refused to defend himself against wiretaps, against Trump Tower and other lies that this administration has bestowed upon him. He refused to defend himself against Donald Trump dismantling his presidential legacy. Obama has no legacy now. The Republicans took it away, and he has nothing to say about it. I don't understand. You know, I mean, why don't you defend yourself? Why don't you defend yourself? I mean, he could bring a lawsuit to, he could sue Donald Trump for defaming him, you know, for saying that he actively worked to wiretap Trump Tower. And everybody was saying, there's no evidence. He didn't do that. That was a big fat lie. And we all wanted Obama to sue Donald Trump. That he had a great suit, but he refused, and he refused to fight the good fight to take back this country from Donald Trump and his goons. I mean, you know, I mean, but hey, wow, that's if you heard the show last week, you'll probably figure out that I was a bit testy when I was talking about Obama, because I really thought that he was going to come out and be a voice for those voices that the Trump administration drowned out, you know, and he was the only one that can do it. I don't think Hillary's going to get out there. I don't think she has the fortitude or the strength or the gumption to get out there and lead the resistance. I don't think that's going to happen. It's just going to be up to us, the people of the United States. We got to leave these folks out. They're not in it. But you know what? Once we start winning, here they come. They're going to start. Here they come. But we have to initiate it. We have to start winning. And then here comes Barack Obama. Here comes Bernie Sanders. Here comes Hillary Clinton. And we can just say, hey, wow, we don't need you. Bye. You know, so. But anyway, my thinking is that Donald Trump, nothing's going to come of this investigation, this federal investigation into Russia meddling into the 2016 elections. Once the investigation is over, I don't really think nothing is going to become of it, folks. I really don't. I think it's just going to be washed over. Trump is going to do 4 years or maybe 8 years. Who knows? It looks like that. Because Trump and his administration have been so good at changing the narrative, getting you to talk about something else, you know, while, you know, he and his minions are breaking the law and getting away with it and being aided and abetted by some of the Republicans in Congress. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. When you begin to think less of others, when you begin to think of less of others, of what they think of you, that's when you start to really think. I believe that. So many people around think more about what others think of them. And that's one of the ways that can stop or impede your success, worrying about what others think of you. I never, ever worry about what others think of me. You either like the George Wilder Jr. Show or you don't. You either read George Wilder Jr.'s books or you do not. You know, because that's the way it is. Because I'm going to keep producing what I produce because I love doing what I do. And when I love doing what I do, nothing, no one say on nothing, anything that they can do will stop me from doing what I love doing. And same for you. You should not let anybody stop you from doing what you're doing, especially if you love what you're doing. You have to love it. We will be right back. We're going to take a musical break right here. All right, I'm back. George Wilder Jr. is back. You can always follow me on Facebook, Block Talk Radio, right here. Click follow. And Instagram, Twitter, I'm all over the place. I had so much fun yesterday on the show. I hope you guys were out there listening. I'm pretty sure you were. And it was just so much fun. And May is all booked up, folks. It is all booked up for May. And it is just phenomenal. All righty. Well, let's see what we got here. Okay. All right. Let's do this right quick. It is a beautiful day in the city of Chicago, folks. It is totally beautiful. You can see that I'm reaching probably. And it's going to be even better. Let's talk about the Electoral College. We will be right back with this.
I want to talk to you about the Electoral College and why it matters. All right, I know this doesn't sound like the most sensational topic of the day, but stay with me because I promise you it's one of the most important. To explain why requires a very brief civics review. The President and Vice President of the United States are not chosen by a nationwide popular vote of the American people. Rather, they are chosen by 538 electors. This process is spelled out in the United States Constitution. Why didn't the founders just make it easy and let the presidential candidate with the most votes claim victory? Why did they create, and why do we continue to need this Electoral College? The answer is critical to understanding not only the Electoral College, but also America. The founders had no intention of creating a pure majority rule democracy. They knew from careful study of history what most have forgotten today or never learned. Pure democracies do not work. They implode. Democracy has been colorfully described as two wolves and a lamb voting on what's for dinner. In a pure democracy, bare majorities can easily tyrannize the rest of a country. The founders wanted to avoid this at all costs. This is why we have three branches of government: executive, legislative, and judicial. It's why each state has two senators, no matter what its population, but also different numbers of representatives based entirely on population. It's why it takes a supermajority in Congress and three-quarters of the states to change the Constitution. And it's why we have the Electoral College. Here's how the Electoral College works. The presidential election happens in two phases. The first phase is purely democratic. We hold 51 popular elections every presidential election year, one in each state and one in D.C. On election day in 2012, you may have thought you were voting for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, but you were really voting for a slate of presidential electors. In Rhode Island, for example, if you voted for Barack Obama, you voted for the state's four Democratic electors. If you voted for Mitt Romney, you were really voting for the state's four Republican electors. Part two of the election is held in December, and it is this December election among the state's 538 electors, not the November election, which officially determines the identity of the next president. At least 270 votes are needed to win. Why is this so important? Because the system encourages coalition building and national campaigning. In order to win, a candidate must have the support of many different types of voters from various parts of the country. Winning only the South or the Midwest is not good enough. You cannot win 270 electoral votes if only one part of the country is supporting you. But if winning were only about getting the most votes, a candidate might concentrate all of his efforts in the biggest cities or the biggest states. Why would that candidate care about what people in West Virginia or Iowa or Montana think? But you might ask, isn't the election really only about the so-called swing states? Actually, no. If nothing else, safe and swing states are constantly changing. California voted safely Republican as recently as 1988. Texas used to vote Democrat. Neither New Hampshire nor Virginia used to be swing states. Most people think that George W. Bush won the 2000 election because of Florida. Well, sort of. But he really won the election because he managed to flip one state which the Democrats thought was safe, West Virginia. Its four electoral votes turned out to be decisive. No political party can ignore any state for too long without suffering the consequences. Every state, and therefore every voter in every state, is important. The Electoral College also makes it harder to steal elections. Votes must be stolen in the right state in order to change the outcome of the Electoral College. With so many swing states, this is hard to predict and hard to do. But without the Electoral College, any vote stolen in any precinct in the country could affect the national outcome, even if that vote was easily stolen in the bluest California precinct or the reddest Texas one. The Electoral College is an ingenious method of selecting a president for a great, diverse republic such as our own. It protects against the tyranny of the majority, encourages coalition building, and discourages voter fraud. Our founders were proud of it. We can be too. I'm Tara Ross for Prager University.
All right, thanks
Join
for that.
Join Prager University. Click here to subscribe to...
Thanks for that. You know, a lot of people have asked me to say something, have someone on the show or something to say about how does the Electoral College work? And she just explained it there, how it worked. I don't necessarily agree with it, but, you know, that's how it works. That's how the Constitution says it should work. Now, I'm more of a popular vote kind of guy, you know. But however, it's the Electoral College that runs things. And you want to say, a lot of people feel, I mean, why do we have to vote, you know? But it's still necessary to vote. It's still very important to get out there to vote. It's still very important. I mean, Electoral College is going to be here forever. It worked in Trump's favor, so don't expect it to go anywhere. And we're just going to have to find out what's going to transpire by then. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Ivanka Trump gets booed for claiming her dad is a tremendous champion for the women. Oh, wow. I knew she had gotten booed. I've heard several times that she had gotten booed, but I didn't know that it was for this. I'm reading this off of Huffington Post. Okay, I'm going to read it again. Ivanka Trump, Donald Trump's daughter, gets booed claiming her dad is a tremendous champion for women. So, you know, she gets booed, you know. You know, but somehow I think this woman's got she got a lot of class. She's got a lot of style. She's no Michelle Obama, of course, but she's not trying to be. I think either her or her Trump's wife plagiarized Michelle Obama's speech a couple years ago. And that was all a rape. And well, she got booed, and but I think she's a trooper. She'll get over it. All right, let's go to the phones. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hi, it's Johanna Derwalowski, your guest.
Oh yeah, you were on earlier. Hi. I think you left for a while. All right, Johanna Derwalowski. I hope I've got that right.
Yes, you did. Hey,
All righty, you were on the show once before, right?
Yes, I was. That was before the election.
yeah, before the election, of course. Thanks for coming back. Thanks for doing it again. So, I mean, in case for those who have forgotten, tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us a small bio and all that good stuff.
Well, to go in, I hope you don't ask me any questions about the electoral process.
No.
I am a foreign national, so I'm from Germany, but I live in the United States, and I'm the author of The Transformation Promise. I have been metaphysical, spiritual field for many, many years, and my mission is to help people change themselves and then with that change the world.
Oh, wow. You and I are about the same thing, to change the world, you know, make the world a better place, because you know what? It surely needs it. But every time I try to make the world a better place, it seems like it gets worse all the time. But we have to hang in there, don't you think?
Well, that's actually normal, because you can't really, it's a place of duality. So if you swing the pendulum one way, it's got to swing the other way too. So as light as it gets, it's as dark as it gets. It's the whole day-night duality thing. But that's how we grow. And the idea is to use, when we look at our dark spots, to use that to bring light into it. And that's how we evolve.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you consider yourself as a motivational speaker, helping those out there who may not be able to help themselves in an emotional kind of a way?
Yeah. That's always about the person themselves. And, you know, right now, mm-hmm. it's so full of growth opportunities. It's wonderful. That's one way to look at it. You know, yeah. the ugly underbelly is exposed.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think so many people refuse to be the best that they can be in their lives?
You know, I'm probably much kinder than you. I think they are the best that they can be from their point of view. I don't think anybody really starts out the day thinking about how can I not be my best.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're all in some state, and we all have blind spots, and we all need really big wake-up calls. And I think right now we have really big wake-up calls, and then we get a choice to make. Are we going to stick our head in the sand and say, well, you know, it's all going to be whatever it's going to be? Or are we going to say, hey, here's an opportunity for me to shed light onto my own darkness and move forward? Because, you know, we can't change anybody else. It doesn't help if no. I
you know, I know that,
said, hey, you know.
I know we can't change people. I mean, people are, especially if it's in their DNA, we can't change people. But there's some people you can move, and you can turn around to be better people. And that's one of the reasons for this show, is for me to reach those people out there who are looking for something better in their lives, but they just need that little kick, that little push, that little motivating word to get them going, get them motivated, get them to doing things. Now, you can't change people per se, but, you know, people have to want to change. People have to want to be different. They have to want to be motivated. They have to want to change. They have to know that there's somebody out there who believes in them. And sometimes when you believe in people and you let them know that you believe in them, they start doing positive things.
Yeah, you can lead the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what you're about, is leading the way to show that you can actually.
You know what? Some people need leaders. They want to be led. They want someone to tell them what they should do, tell them where they should go, tell them this. I think it's sad when you have to, but there's people out here who are actually looking for leadership. And there are people out here who actually want to be leaders.
You know, I think that looking for leadership is in human nature. That's why we have all the religions. We're always looking mm-hmm. for somebody to tell us what to do or what's right, or not wanting to take responsibility for your own action is actually, you know, has its good parts, especially mm-hmm. if your actions aren't anything you're proud of, then it's always better mm-hmm. you can blame somebody else. And I'm saying that not seriously, but it's convenient if you mm-hmm. have somebody else and you don't have to take responsibility. But if you start to grow, you start to take responsibility for who you are and what you're doing. And right now, you know, the way I look at things going on are that greed really has the upper hand right now in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And love is, you know, not on the top list, and compassion. So how can we change that? We can't change it. You can't go up to somebody on the street and say, hey, I think you should have more compassion and less greed. So that's, you know, not going to be very successful. But what we can do is look at our own lives and say, where's my greed? Where's my compassion? How can I change myself? And if you start doing that, then people will see, wow, look at George. He is so happy. What is he doing with his life? And then they come like, wow, this is all you did? Okay, that's really great. Let me try that too.
And I don't think
that's really how you lead.
I don't think using me as an example is good. But I understand your point. Joanna, can you tell us about your book?
Yeah, it's a self-help book. And what it really is, if you, well, you can read it as a reading book, but it also has questions in it, which makes it a little bit of a workbook, to just get to know yourself. Because often we run through the day and we're not really aware of what we're doing. Most people struggle so hard that they don't have time to think about how can I change that? You know, they run from job to job to family to job to job to family. And so this book makes you look at yourself. What am I doing? Where am I? Where am I tied into? And how can I change that and grow and expand?
So getting this book, you'll really learn a lot about yourself and life in general and how to take some of the things that you supply in the book and as your own.
Yeah, and from what I hear, the examples are really easy, transferable onto your own life. So it's not, I use some clients' examples and a lot of my own examples because my life has been full of trials and
tribulations,
many errors.
Yeah. So I was, that was going to be my next question. How much of you are in your book?
There's a lot of me in the book. I was a very stubborn young person, and I had to figure it out for myself, which, you know, is, I think, what a lot of people do. I wasn't good at taking advice from some very well-meaning people in my life.
Yeah,
I wanted to figure out how things work for myself, and that was really good.
And during that, during all that time, a lot of those things that you rebelled against, you actually learned from.
Yeah, maybe not that much rebelled against. I just tried things out, and a lot of them didn't work out.
Okay. All right. What's the name of the book? Transformational?
The Transformation Promise.
Promise.
Because it is a promise. Because nothing stays the same. So we're always changing, but we often change to repeat the exact same story in a different setting. Mm-hmm. So we're not staying in the same place, but, you know, the grass is greener somewhere else. So you move to the other lawn and shortly thereafter, it looks exactly the same.
So, what do people say? No, go right ahead.
In this book, I'm trying to tell you, don't go from your lawn to the other lawn. Change your lawn.
Mm-hmm. And how are people reacting to the book that you know of?
Well, I have heard some really great remarks of it. The most surprising to me was coming from an age group that I didn't initially think about when I was writing the book. A lot of people between the age of 16 and 25.
Wow.
Said that it was enormously helpful to them in figuring out what to do, which career to choose, and how to move forward in life.
Yeah, something similar like that has happened to me recently. I was checking the ratings for this show, and because there is a system to the George Wilder Jr. Show and other radio shows, where you can figure out who's what gender is listening to your show more than others. And I found out that there are more women listening to this show than anything. And that blew me over. That it really did, because I wanted to balance it a little bit. I was trying to do that.
Well, it's a good sign.
And I'm saying,
it's a good sign.
Yeah, totally. I'm not discrediting it or anything, but I wanted to kind of balance it off. And whoa, 100%. Whoa, where's the guys? Anyway, it was just something I found out. I thought it related to something you just said, and yeah. I thought I'd throw it in there. It was a shocker. Yeah, it was a shocker. But yeah, hey,
I thought people that would be drawn to the book would be people, you know, in their 30s and up, trying to, you know, get with the new age and change their lives. And
yeah. So are you going to be writing any more books?
Yes, I am. I'm going for the hopefully novel this time.
Fiction?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I do a lot of fiction. One of the reasons why I write fiction, because it's fun. And I wouldn't write unless it was fun. And it is a lot of fun. I get a great kick out of inventing characters and sometimes making myself a character in one of my own books and, you know, and stuff like that. It's just fun. I mean, making stuff up. But, you know, writing fiction, just because I write fiction doesn't mean there isn't an element of truth in the book, or there isn't elements of the characters being human. And I've done some nonfiction stuff. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I think you can say everything you want to say in fiction.
Yeah, as long as it makes sense.
You know, in the characters. Well, yeah, but I mean, you can get everything out that inspires and transforms in fiction as well. And I like to write, so.
Me too. What do you like to write? Well, why do you like to write? What is it about writing that makes you want to write?
Curiosity. I like to see where it goes. So I start, and then I just let the characters or the story become its own, and I'm always surprised at where it ends up.
When you write, do you outline what you write, or you just sit down and just start writing?
I start writing and then I outline maybe later. Much later.
One of the things I never do, I never outline. I just sit down and just start. Right? Outlining one just pushed it out of the way and just start typing. Nothing I've ever written. I don't think I've ever did an outline. I've tried, but it just didn't work.
I've done outlines more towards the end during the first edit, when you know where the story is, because when I start, I don't know where it's going to go. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me either. But until I started.
The next corner.
And then then it comes to you, you know, it just comes, you know, when you start a story, when I start a story, I never know how it's going to end up until it's done. And then I get the edits on it. I do all of that stuff and it sounds pretty good. And I put it out there and it's just great. It's just wonderful. All right. Is there anything else you want to say that you haven't said before we go?
There's something I would like to say about, especially what's going on in the politics, to, you know, watch out for the duality and just don't put yourself in opposition of everybody. And instead to just send them love.
Okay.
You know, you can still make your voice heard. And I mean, I'm certainly very opinionated about everything that's going on myself, and I go out and march and everything. And I think that's a good way to make your voice heard. But on the other side, you know, if this whole country would just send love in their thoughts to our president, I think that would create a real change. Because a lot of times people strive, they thrive on the opposition. Gives them power, gives them the feeling of power. But if everybody comes with love, you can still hold all your opinions and everything. That changes the picture. Also, all the things that are really aggravating, like for me, for instance, it's this fascination with greed right now. To just look at your own life and eliminate it where you can. Eliminate the things that bother you in others, on yourself.
And Joanna,
so one by one, we can change everything.
Yeah. Joanna Derbolowski on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And you know what? I will send you a clip. I will send you a link. I'm sorry. A link to the show, because I remember you asking for one. And I will do that in about a few hours once the show has been processed. I want to thank you for being on the show. Okay?
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me. It's my honor.
No problem. Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All righty, let's take a break and we will be right back, folks. Let's see. Thank you. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me all over the place. Not literally, though, just through social media, folks, because it's all about.
My son has been arrested for walking while black.
A lot of sons have been.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame. You know, in the case of Garner, well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was better. It's like, no, stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me.
evening. Before I respond to President Trump's speech and what he said tonight, I wanted to say a few words about what he didn't say, because when you analyze a speech, sometimes what is more important is what somebody does not say as opposed to what they actually say. Some examples. At a time when over half of older Americans have no retirement savings, I did not hear President Trump say one word, not one word, about Social Security or Medicare. During the campaign, as we all remember, President Trump promised over and over and over again that he would not cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. It was a cornerstone of his campaign. But in his first address to the nation, he didn't even mention Social Security or Medicare once, not a single time. Even worse, President Trump has proposed a massive cut to Medicaid, massive cut, threatening the nursing home care of millions of senior citizens and the health care of many, many of our children. I urge President Trump, keep your promises. Tell the American people, tweet to the American people that you will not cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Further, I did not hear President Trump tonight mention the words income and wealth inequality, or the fact that we now have the widest gap between the very rich and everyone else since the 1920s. I did not hear President Trump mention the fact that as a result of the disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision, a 5-4 decision, we now have a corrupt campaign finance system that is allowing billionaires to buy elections and undermine American democracy. How could you give a speech to the nation and not talk about that enormously important issue? Furthermore, not only did President Trump not mention the issue of voter suppression, what Republican governors are doing all over this country to make it harder for people to participate in our democracy, but the truth of the matter is his administration is now working overtime with Republican governors to make it harder for young people, low-income people, senior citizens, and people of color to vote. That is an outrage. Perhaps most astoundingly, at a time when the scientific community is virtually unanimous in telling us that climate change is real, that it is caused by human activity, that it is already causing devastating problems in our country and all over the world, I did not hear President Trump say one word, not one word, about the need to combat climate change, the greatest environmental threat facing our planet. Not only did he not mention climate change, he pledged to increase our dependency on fossil fuels. Furthermore, at a time when we have more people in jail than any other country on earth, disproportionately African American, Latino, Native American, I did not hear President Trump say one word about how he was going to fix a broken criminal justice system. Yes, we must support the hard work of men and women in the police departments and the sheriff's departments all over this country. But we must end also the disgrace of having more people in jail than any other country on earth. Furthermore, at a time when we need the best educated workforce in the world to compete in a highly competitive global economy, I did not hear President Trump say one word, not one word, about the need to lower the cost of college and to do what countries all over the world are doing, and that is to make public colleges and universities tuition free. It's an enormously important issue impacting millions of families throughout this country. Not one word about making colleges more affordable, not one word about addressing the crisis of student debt. During his campaign, President Trump told us that he was going to take on Wall Street and drain the swamp. Remember that? He was going to drain the swamp. Well, the swamp, big time, is now in his administration, which has more millionaires and billionaires than any presidential administration in history. Amazingly enough, for somebody who was going to drain the swamp, who was going to take on Wall Street, his chief economic advisor, Gary Cohn, is the former president of Goldman Sachs, one of the major financial institutions that paid billions of dollars in fines for their illegal activity. That's really draining the swamp. Needless to say, I did not hear President Trump say one word about another campaign promise that he made to the American people, and that was to reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. Now, that's a little bit about what Trump did not say tonight. Let me just say a few words about what he did say. The truth is that some of what President Trump said tonight, it sounds good on the surface, but it doesn't sound so good if you dig just a little deeper beneath the surface. President Trump told us that we need to invest $1 trillion in our infrastructure, in our crumbling infrastructure, to create millions of new jobs. And you know what? He is absolutely right. That's something that I have been working on for years. But the specifics of the financing plan that he has provided us so far are absolutely wrong. We cannot rebuild our infrastructure by providing billions of dollars in tax breaks to Wall Street and large corporations. Donald Trump said tonight that we need to promote clean air and clean water. And to be very honest with you, because I was only a few feet away from the president, I had a difficult time not laughing out loud when he said that. Because on this very, very day, he signed an executive order rolling back President Obama's clean water rules and has appointed the most anti-environmental EPA administrator in our nation's history. President Trump said tonight that he wants to substantially increase funding for the Pentagon. What he didn't say tonight is that he will come up with that $84 billion in increased funding for the Pentagon by slashing programs that benefit the working people of this country, that benefit the elderly, that benefit the children, the sick, and the poor. Now, here's the truth. At a time when our country spends more on defense than the next 12 countries combined, when virtually every major defense contractor has committed fraud and has had to pay fines to the federal government for their fraudulent activity, at a time when the Pentagon has buried evidence of $125 billion in bureaucratic waste, President Trump wants to increase defense spending by $84 billion over the next year and a half. And let me be very clear in stating that I think those priorities are wrong. We should not be cutting massively programs for people in need and then significantly expanding spending for the military. And let's be also clear. The $84 billion that President Trump wants to pump into the bloated Pentagon budget could, just as one example, provide free tuition at every public college and university in this country and begin to reduce the crushing burden of student debt in America. That is a choice. Do we add another $80+ billion to the Pentagon, or do we allow every qualified young American the ability to go to college tuition-free in a public college and university and substantially reduce student debt? I think the choice is clear. I think we do not need to greatly increase Pentagon spending. And while President
Thanks, Bernie. All right. Paul McCartney will be in town. Yeah, the former Beatle. I think Paul is around 75 years old. Paul McCartney, the former Beatle, one-on-one. Paul McCartney, he's going to be doing some Beatles songs. He's going to be doing songs that were recorded by John Lennon as a Beatle. I mean, you know, I mean, when the Beatles were at the top of their form, if you listen to a lot of Beatles records, you know, basically Paul wrote his own songs and sang his own songs. John wrote his songs and sang his own songs, but they always shared writing, even though one of them did not actually write the song. They always shared writing credits for songs that only one of them had written. Let's say if Paul sings, when Paul sings, what's that song, that slow song? Yesterday. Yeah, Yesterday, a song he'd written yesterday, recorded in 1965. It was, it came out on record as The Beatles, even though it was just Paul singing on the song, singing the song. But it, when it hit the stores, it was The Beatles, Yesterday. Okay, but it's Paul's song. He wrote it, solely wrote it, and he sung it all by himself. But John Lennon had a writing credit on that song. But John Lennon had nothing to do with writing that song. That's the way the Beatles were. It was always Lennon and McCartney. But actually, it was just one of them. I guess they had some sort of deal or oral deal in saying, hey, well, no matter who writes a song, we're both going to get credit for it, writing credits for it. And because, you know, and it happened. It happened until they went solo. And you take the song Hard Day's Night. It was written solely by John Lennon. I don't believe, and I don't think Paul McCartney had anything to do with it. But on the writing credits for that particular song, it says Lennon and McCartney. So once Paul McCartney is here July 25th, he's going to be at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. Okay, and he might wind up at either Cubs Park or White Sox Park, you know, doing a concert, because he's done that those kind of things before. But Paul McCartney is going to be in town, folks, and from the credits that I've been seeing, he's going to be doing a lot of the songs from the Beatles' Hard Day's Night movie and the album, which majority of the songs I believe was written by John Lennon. And Can't Buy Me Love was written by Paul McCartney. But they shared, no matter who wrote the song, they shared credits. One of the ways if you listen to Beatles music, one of the ways you can tell who wrote a song is by who is singing the lead. If Paul is singing a lead on a Beatles song, he wrote it. If John is singing the lead on a Beatles song, John wrote it. But on the credits for those songs, it will always be, and it always have been, Lennon and McCartney, because I believe they were a team. And at one time, Paul McCartney, after John's death, Paul McCartney was trying to sue to get his songs to be his songs without John Lennon's name attached to it. And somehow that didn't happen, you know, because I think he gave up on it because a lot of fans were saying, hey, let it be the way it always have been, Lennon and McCartney. No matter who's singing the song, no matter who wrote it, it's always Lennon and McCartney. But the majority of the time, if you're listening to a Beatles song, whoever is on the lead wrote the song. For instance, you take George Harrison's song, Here Comes the Sun. It's a Beatles song, but George Harrison is singing the lead on that song. Therefore, the writing credit goes to George Harrison only. Only. Even though it's a Beatles song. But John and Paul had nothing to do with it. But it's a Beatles song. During those days, they were all Beatles. You know, that's a little tidbit that I found out. And I thought it was very interesting. And because my favorite Beatle, I have nothing against Paul McCartney. I think he's a great guy. I think he's in his 70s. He's been around a long time. He's kept himself really, really in good shape. He hasn't any disease that I know of that's been out there. But he's the man now. Every now and then, Paul and Ringo gets together for a Beatle, you know, kind of reunion with their wives, with John's wife and George's wife. And it's something to see. But anyway, I'm just pointing to that because John is dead and Paul is coming to Hollywood Casino Amphitheater July 25th. Paul is a workaholic. He's close to a billionaire or he is a billionaire. And he's a pretty good guy. I've got some of his music right here. But he's coming. In case you guys want to know out there that if Paul McCartney's coming, he's on his way. The Lone Beatle. Actually, he is not the Lone Beatle. Ringo Starr is still out there, you know. So, but in terms of writing credits, he's the Lone Beatle, okay? And he's going to be pretty good. He's going to be pretty good. All right, that's enough on Paul McCartney coming to the Hollywood Casino Theater. Get tickets Saturday at noon at 10 a.m. I'm pretty sure a lot of seniors going to be lining up to get tickets to see Paul McCartney because Paul McCartney is a senior, an elderly, but he's still doing it. He's still walking. And when I say walking, because a lot of seniors that age, 75 and older, I mean, you know, I mean, you get pain just walking. I mean, the pain just shoots. It just goes through you, man. You know, so he's still healthy. He looks it. And he's on stage. And I wish him all the best. One of the Beatles, Paul McCartney. But as I've always said, John was my favorite Beatle. I've got nothing against Paul, Ringo, or George. John was my favorite Beatle because I think most of his songs were songs. They were uplifting. And that's another difference I found between Paul McCartney and John Lennon. Paul McCartney wrote and sang most of the love songs the Beatles recorded. He wrote and sang most of the love songs. John Lennon wrote and sang some of the most, spirited songs, the uplifting songs, songs that had a message, something near to what Bob Dylan was doing at that time. So they were different. They were different. John Lennon started off writing love songs until he heard Bob Dylan and started talking to Bob Dylan. So he started singing songs, protest songs, songs of the civil rights movement and all that kind of thing. And Paul kept on with love songs. So that was one of the differences, or maybe, you know, a few differences between the two. But John was my favorite Beatle for some reason. I mean, I have nothing against Paul. He's a great musician. And I guess we'll leave it at that. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, I want to thank my guest, Joanna Durbolowski. I'm breaking it into syllables, folks. All righty, let's see what we got here. Okay, all right, Paul McCartney coming to Chicago. That's great, at least a part of Chicago. And let's see what we got. Let's see, can we click off this? Let's see. All righty.
Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
All right, Skokie couple married 69 years, die minutes apart, holding hands. That's the way I want to go. You know, holding hands with my loved one. Wow. Isaac and Teresa Vatkin, a Skokie couple married 69 years, died within minutes of each other Saturday, holding hands in their shared hospital room. Wow. They died in the same hospital room. They were married for 69 years. That's sweet. I mean, how many times have you actually heard about people, married people who have been married for 50, 60, 70 years, and when one of them pass away, the other one pass away minutes after that person has passed away? That's great. That means that they are together in death. Wherever he is, she is. Wherever she is, he is. And that's beautiful. I mean, we've heard this before a few times, notably Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds. Carrie Fisher passed away. Debbie said, I want to go where Carrie is. Mother and daughter passed away Debbie passed away a day after her daughter Carrie Fisher passed away. That's got to be beautiful. And this Skokie couple married 69 years, folks, 69 years. You got some people who haven't been married 1 year, 6 months, you know. But 69 years, that is saying something marvelous about what's out here. 69 years. And I'm going to do a story called Grow Old With Me. I got to try and figure out the premise of it. And it's going to be something to this effect. I'm probably going to use some of this, research some of this, and put it to a unique story. Isaac and Teresa Vatkin, a Skokie couple married 69 years within the minutes of each other, died within minutes of each other, holding hands in their shared hospital room. Wow. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. That's great. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me all over the place, not literally, but online. Google, Instagram, Twitter, I'm all over the place, you know. And it's fun. It's fun, folks. And I want to thank Joanne Durbolowski. She can always come back to the show. She's always welcome back. She's a very, very sweet and kind and caring individual. And it's all about making the world a better place on the George Wilder Jr. Show. It is 7:21 straight up, and I'm looking at the thermometer here. It's 68 degrees. It's cooler near the lake because one of the reasons why it's cooler near the lake because the lake waters are still kind of cold. And if you're living near the lake, the air from the lake waters, the cold lake waters, will blow inland. you know, so inland to where we are, and it's freezing while everybody else is enjoying 75, 80 degree weather. We're the ones over here by the lake, and damn, they're freezing to death. But soon as the waters warm up, and you know, it's going to be great. Seriously, the weather is not bad. It is not bad on the north side, the west side, the east side of Chicago. It is great all over. But when you're near the lake, it's a tad bit cooler, as always. And that's expected because that's nature. But I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. I've always enjoyed living or being near the lake shore, the beaches, and all this kind of stuff. I've always enjoyed that. And I will continue to enjoy that. And I will continue, and we will continue to endure this type of weather, even though it's still great weather. It's still wonderful weather. It's the kind of weather you can wear shorts, short sleeves, but you know, you might be rubbing your hands together a little bit. But hey, wow, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. So it's 68 degrees in the city of Chicago. It might be a little lower, maybe 60 near the lake or something to that effect, but it's still great weather. People are still out in shorts. I mean, really, really short shorts. You ever seen those really, really short shorts? But they're out there, and it's just proving that the weather is great. It's wonderful, and it is beautiful. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's 7:23. We got about 8 more minutes into the show. That's a long time. All righty. We're going to do, let's see, can we go down and do something? Oh, we don't have time for that. Okay. All righty. We will, let's see, making the world a better place one show at a time. That's all the show is about, making the world a better place. Sometimes to get a little, it feels like it just not happening, but it is. There's people all over this place who are bettering themselves, bettering their lives, listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. You know, I mean, hey, wow, because that's what it's all about, is uplifting you. And I do think people can be uplifted, you know, and I do agree that they have to want to be uplifted to be uplifted. But I think most people do want to be uplifted. And as I've said, some people are looking for leaders. There's nothing wrong with looking for someone to lead you if you don't think that you can lead yourself. But you make sure that that person that's leading you is going to lead you in the right direction. You know, there's a lot of leaders out here that can lead you into the wrong direction. And that wrong direction might be walking straight into Lake Michigan. So you want to make sure that before you follow anybody, before you listen to anybody, before you take a hold of anybody, you want to make sure that they are the right kind of people that you want around. They're the right kind of people that you want around your children. You want around your family, your relatives. You want to make sure of that, because in this day and age, 2017 and the 21st century, scoundrels are coming out of the closet, out of the woodwork, and they will pound on you for everything. If they feel you have something that they want, believe me, and you become vulnerable, they will try to get it. So when you're out here in the world, make sure you watch out for everybody. You know, everybody cannot be trusted, no matter what they look like. No matter who they are, everybody is after something, you know. And if you have it and they find out, and if they're not on the up and up, if they're have not been scrutinized, they will come after you. So when you're walking down the street, make sure you are, no matter what side of the city you're on, no matter what city you're in, or no matter what part of the world you might be in, if you're out and about to your surroundings, pay attention to your surroundings, because that is so, so vital. It is so vital that you pay attention to your surroundings, you know, and because the bad guys are out. One of the things I learned is that when you pay attention to, let's say if you're being followed by somebody, or somebody's thinking about following you, or somebody is casing you, and let's go back and say somebody's following you directly behind you. Most of the time, if you look back and you spot the person that's been following you, you see them and they know that you've saw them. They will then say, hey, wow, you know, they may not or will not accost you or try to bother you because you've spotted them. You have a cell phone, you have mace or whatever, you carrying a gun. They're not going to bother you because they don't know what they know you saw them. But so they're going to go a different direction because they know that you saw them. You have taken away their element of surprise. So pay attention to your surroundings. You don't have to stare anybody in the eye, but pay attention to your surroundings and let those people who you think may be following you, let them know that you know that they're there. And if they try anything, you are ready for them. You know, so always pay attention to your surroundings. That's totally, totally important because too many people do not pay attention to the surroundings and they wind up hurt, robbed, or dead. You have to pay attention to the folks and people who coming in front of you, the people on the side of you, if you don't know them, and the ones that are coming up behind you, you know, and especially for elder people. I mean, you really have to pay attention to your surroundings because you are the prey that they're seeking because they feel that you're old, tired, and weak. You can't defend yourself, but you fool them. You let them know you can defend yourself. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. We're just about off the air, folks. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. I want to thank my guest, Joanna Derbalowski. Okay? And I hope you guys join me tomorrow. We're going to have some great guests on the show, a great guest on the show tomorrow. That should be interesting. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bombs begin to fall. Anyone who never saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. From the mighty and the mighty from the small.